maybe 12 issues.
I don't know if you'll need work for that.
We'll see. We'll try to work this a few ways. I have a pretty loud voice and a pretty deep voice. Actually, it sounds like Ernest Borgnine early in the morning. So. My name is Katie. I am a grateful recovered alcoholic. I have had the gift of sobriety since October the 28th of 1984, and for that I am truly grateful. I want to thank Chris for asking me to come. I'm always excited as a woman to be asked to speak in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll get more into the male-female observation later on in my talk. When Chris asked me, it was great because Wednesday night's my night off. And you know, it's funny, I don't know why I think Kerrville is an hour away. It is not an hour away. Whew, I'm telling you. But thank you guys very much for having me down here. I hear a lot about the Outpost, and to be asked to speak here is really quite an honor. Charlie is my significant other that does have trouble committing. We'll talk about that later, too. Oh, it's not ouch. Trust me. It's just reality. I mean, where else do you hear the real truth but in an AA meeting, you know? What I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, guys, I got sober when I was 26 years old. I'm 51 years old now. I know. Pretty good, huh? Yeah. For you young people, this is how you can look at 51, okay? The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous got me in touch with a God that not only of my understanding, but that is crazy about Katie. And I never knew that was possible, I'm telling you. I mean, one of the things in Alcoholics Anonymous that I learned, honey, you need to take that basket, and no, I don't need Al-Anon because I told him that. I have 60 to 63 that I work with that one. This God taught me about integrity, taught me about dignity, and taught me about respect. And that's one of the things I absolutely love about Alcoholics Anonymous, because the girl that came in here didn't have much of that. This wasn't what I looked like when I came in here, you know. I had a whole lot of pride, and that pride got me in a whole lot of trouble. My story starts out, you know, the book asked me to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And what I think that means is what I was like without God in my life, what happened when I found God in these rooms, and what I'm like today. And, you know, when I was a kid, I'm the youngest of three. I have an older brother, and my sister's the middle child. And we're all 2 years apart, all, you know, born in the 50s. That's kind of what you did. Stay-at-home mom. Dad traveled, you know, for a Union Carbide. He worked for a U.S. Steel Union Carbide subsidiary, and he was gone Monday through Friday, and so Mom raised us, and that was the deal. You know, it was Leave It to Beaver was on TV, Father Knows Best. You know, that was what we grew up on. I could go down roads of, you know, this reality TV programming really damaging these children of today, but I won't. because, you know, Leave It to Beaver for me was reality. And I often wonder what the kids think when they see reality TV program. They're still kids and they're confused, you know, behind all of this stuff. And we got to do the best we can once we get them in here. You know what I'm saying? Man, we got to teach them a lot. And, but when I was a kid, I never ever felt like, I never, you know, people say they didn't feel like they fit in. That was not the feeling I had. That was definitely the end result. But what I had is I had to be the center of attention all the time. I was the kid that was the pain in the ass. I was the one that was always the problem child. All the attention had to be brought to me. And then when I got through school, I was most likable, the favorite, the nerds liked me, the jocks liked me, the druggies liked me. You know, I was liked by all, and that's a lot of pressure. I mean, that's a lot of pressure to keep all these plates spinning. And that was my experience of the malady. That was what I needed to have filled all the time. And one of the things that we did before, alcohol is my problem. I did do some lots of outside issues in my my whole usage, of course, because it was just a lot easier to get drugs than it was alcohol. You know, when I started drinking at 11, and it was really difficult to get somebody to buy you booze other than stealing it from your parents at 11. You know, at 11, they were questioning you. But, you know, by the time you're 14, it was a lot easier to get. How many of y'all remember sitting out front of that 7-Eleven? Yeah, waiting for that sick guy to pull up, and he was the one that was very difficult to get rid of, right? He'd buy you the booze, but he wanted to come with the booze, and I know you're sitting in this room right now. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you were like that booger trying to flick off the finger, you know what I mean? I mean, you'd finally get that guy to buy you booze, and then you couldn't get rid of him. You know, you're diving into the woods, and you're trying to just deviate to lose the weirdo. But one of the things was that we did long before, well, it could have been somewhere around 11, but I think it was more around 9, we hyperventilated. And it's interesting. I don't know many people that hyperventilated, but if you did, you know, that could have been a test for alcoholism. Because, you know, you'd get a towel and you'd wrap it up and you'd strangle your buddy, and they'd hit the floor, and either they came out of it going, "Wow, do it again." Or they'd go, "Don't ever touch me with that towel again." See, I think the guy that said, "Don't touch me," is not an alcoholic. I think the alcoholic loved being knocked out early on. And, you know, I also remember, now granted, this is all looking back, I also remember I loved Vicks Formula 44. Loved that black stuff. Drank lots of it. And then, you know, as I'm tooling along, my story kind of has a tragedy in it. And honestly, when I came into AA, I truly believe that tragedy was why I was alcoholic. And I think a lot of people believe that at first. And I think it takes a while for some of us to really grasp the understanding and the hopeless condition of mind and body on the first step. But I believed I was alcoholic based on this tragedy. My mother got sick when I was young, and I was the baby, and I was her favorite. And it seemed that my father loved my brother and sister more, the same old song and dance of the alcoholic, you know. Although my brother's alcoholic and my sister's just crazy. But I think what happened is when she got sick, I was in the second grade, and back then you were not allowed in the hospitals if you were a child. A lot of things the younger generation doesn't know, but you were not allowed in the hospitals because of childhood illness. So when my mother was in the hospital, we were thinking, wow, she's sick, and then they brought us in, you know, a little bit like terms of endearment. You know, little did we know we were coming to say goodbye, but I'll never forget that moment, being so miserably uncomfortable, and then we walk in this room, and she was a small woman anyway, and all these machines, she died of a kidney disease, and the next day, when we woke up, you know, my mother had died that night, and from that point on, my dad, God bless him, he was also an ex-football player. He played for the Steelers. And that is a fun guy. You know, if your dad played professional ball, that is a whole lot different than your dad being the head of the Marines. You know what I mean? I mean, your house was a party house, and that's what our house was. It was, alcohol was always fun. And, you know, we had the entire Buffalo Bills over there one time. And, I mean, it was just a lot of fun. And so 6 weeks after my mother died, he remarried. Now, that, today, I get 6 weeks. As a kid, I just remembered thinking, you know, whoa, what happened? And this woman lasted about 6 days. She brought two kids in, one younger than me. That's going to be a problem, right? I'm no longer the baby, and I remember trying to figure out how to kill this kid. I mean, I remembered, I know you understand that. See, I didn't want to hurt her. I wanted to kill her. You see, we're either suicidal or homicidal. You know what I mean? I mean, our thinking can get, when the book says we are outright mental defects, cannot differentiate the true from the false. I remember chasing my brother with knitting needles, my stepbrother, figuring out how to stab and kill him. Now, granted, I didn't really realize the danger that I would get in for killing him. But at that time, I'm grateful somebody stopped me. And what happened after the woman left our house in came another mother 3 months later. This mother was horrible. She lasted a very short period of time. However, she got pregnant. And I have a half-brother, bless his heart, who was removed from the family till he was 21. He's one of us. Every time I talk to him, he's got 90 days. Always got 90 days. First time I ever said that, the whole group clapped. It's like, oh, no, he's always got 90 days. And then about 3 months later, my dad married another woman. And this woman ended up staying, and she had two kids, and they were older than me, so they all fit in. So we were between the age of 10 and 15 growing up in Houston, Texas. And so in an 18-month period, we had four live-in housekeepers and three moms. Now, I'm telling you, that'll make you drink. That kind of insanity will make you drink. And so I really believe that's why I drank and did outside issues. I firmly believe that. I needed to medicate the insanity that was going on. Now, it was always a party at our house, so I never viewed alcohol as the problem. I got off strongly into a lot of outside issues and really believed that was my problem because it accelerated my drinking. And I remember when I did eventually come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I told them, look, I have no problem with alcohol, but these outside issues are killing me, man. So just don't touch my drink and I'll be fine. Well, one of the other things about me and my personality, because see, you know, that's not what made me alcoholic, right? We're all clear on that issue. That didn't make me alcoholic, but it doggone sure did influence my personality. And my personality is very strong. I'm very prideful. I'm incredibly insecure at the same time, right? I always love when people go, I can't believe you're insecure. It's like, I'm alcoholic, man. I'm either here or here. You know, the beauty is I'm better more in the middle most of the time, but my God, if you don't like me, I don't really have to like you, but I don't like it if you don't like me, right? Well, you know what I'm talking about. So so one of the things I did in school around the second grade is I absolutely shut school off. I never liked it anyway. I don't like it today. Education and me do not mix. You know, a lot of people come into AA and really realize they miss this huge thing about education, and they go back, and I admire the heck out of that. I really do. I absolutely want no part of it. I couldn't wait to get out of school, period. And, well, there's a downside to that. I do not read very well, I do not comprehend very well, and I absolutely cannot spell very well, right? But I ended up leaving home at 15, and I still got through school. I became a professional cheater, and that's not the cheater that sits there and looks over at your paper. That's the cheater that breaks into school, knows where the teacher leaves the key, because remember, this is all before computers. It was all done with a number 2 pencil. You could buy that anywhere, right? So, you know, I'd leave the windows unlocked in the school. I'd sneak in the school late at night. The teachers always left all the papers. I'd regrade them. You know, there was the key. You know, I'd redo it. And I mean, can you imagine if I'd have put that towards education? I would have a PhD. I really would. But I disliked school so much and couldn't wait to get out, but had so much pride and so much ego that I had to have that diploma. I absolutely could not face the world as a dropout. Go figure on that one. It really is interesting. And I'll tell you, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and they hand you a book, that's not good news. It was like, oh, come on, man. You got that on tape or anything? Cause, you know, And I actually had somebody read it to me. I can read, but I just can't comprehend. Right? I mean, I can read a page and my mind just wanders and if somebody says, what'd you read? Well, I don't know. Don't really know. And I didn't get the old man. I didn't get his whole history. I still today don't care for history unless it involves me. And, so, you know, Bill's whole story is a story of, you know, history because it's before my time. So I really didn't care about that. Well, here's what ended up happening to me. I leave home at 15. And I mean, it's amazing, I rented a house, I convinced this woman to rent this little house, I worked my tail off, I had an incredible work ethic, The teachers loved me. I'd wash and wax their cars. I'd mow your yard. I'd move rocks. What do you need me to do? You know, I'd do whatever it takes. And so I was able to make a living and have always been able to make a living. But what ended up happening is through all of this, my alcoholism began to accelerate. I bet I lost the power of choice and drink somewhere around 18 to 21. I got pregnant. I was married, actually, to a guy, and I didn't have to marry him. I didn't get pregnant and have to marry him back in the day when that was kind of what you did. But I was married basically for 8 years to a guy that was quite a bit older than I was. He was 24. It sounds so young now, doesn't it? But I have this beautiful daughter. I got pregnant, had her when I was 21. She's 30 now and has a, I have a fabulous grandson who's 2.5. Who has grandchildren? Oh, is it not just unbelievable, isn't it? They're just the best. God, I got pictures. I got everything. He is crazy about Big Paw and Ram. That's my name, Ram. So I am drinking outside issues, crazy. Well, there was a speaker, back in the 80s that was very popular, Bob Earl. And, Bob Earl was coming to Austin. I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't on the TVs like it is today. I mean, back in the early 80s, I don't remember ever seeing a treatment center or, you know, if you suffer from depression or does somebody have a drinking problem. AA to me was for old men in trench coats. That was the vision I had, and I wanted nothing to do with it because I wasn't that. You know, I just seemed to get in a lot. I had a lot of problems based on my drinking. And so I end up... A buddy of mine from Houston calls, and this is a buddy. Now, go back to the 80s with me, you guys. Back in the 80s, there was lots of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, right? So it wasn't dangerous. You weren't going to die from having sex back then, right? You had very few communicable diseases that were, right? Now, come on, give me a head nod or something. I'm beginning to think I'm in an Al-Anon meeting here. Come on, nod your head. Yes, we are the same group, a little promiscuous, yes. Nothing against Al-Anons, trust me, but you know what I'm saying. We're a little wilder, right? Yes. I love the Al-Anon program. Don't hear that I said that, for God's sake. And this buddy of mine was a roll in the hay buddy. Got it? So he calls me and he says, Katie, listen, you know, we got Bob Earl speaking. He's I'm in AA again. Oh, great. And he goes, listen, I'm bringing a buddy of mine to town, was wondering if we could stay at your house. And I said, well, you know what? You can stay at my house as long as you don't mention AA. I got no problem with my drinking. I absolutely don't want any AA talk in here. It was Halloween weekend, right? I got sober October 28th. I was going to be Tina Turner because she was my hero. Still is today. Does that surprise you? And, you know, you remember the album cover where her hair is gold and she's got the black tight outfit and the fishnets? That's what I was wearing. I was going to this incredible party that had high-end rollers, lots of drugs, lots of alcohol, and I was going to meet the man that was going to fix me. That's what we women do, and you guys are looking for that, but not the fix, right? Oh, yeah. We come together and the explosion happens. So I'm all ready and I tell this guy, come on, whatever. Well, he comes walking in the house and I'm giving him a hug and his buddy's standing behind him and I'm thinking, wow, that guy is cute. He is cute. Well, I've got a dilemma, right? Because now it's the 80s, so it's not quite as free-spirited as it is today, right? You pick one partner and you stay with them, and the next day you may pick another partner, but you don't bring everybody in the room at the same time, like it is a little bit more freer today, which I think is way wrong. And but this is my story. And so I end up, you know, and I really like this guy, you know, and I'm young, I'm a single mother, and I'm looking for a guy, period. And so as the day goes on, I'm so deathly afraid of drinking in front of these people because they might snatch my beer. See, that's what I think alcohol, you keep the alcohol away from these people. You know, they were young, I was confused, they were good looking, it didn't make much sense to me. But that day was one of the funnest days I'd ever had, and I didn't drink. And then that evening I get all dressed up, I get my hair done, I'm all ready to go to this massive party. I tell him, hey, been fun, got to go. And I, as a drunk car would do, I get to like the second block from my house and it dies. Right? Because that's usually what our cars do when we're drinking. And I come back to the house. I tell the boys my car broke down two blocks away. And they went out and they went and looked at it. They said, your car's not going anywhere. You know, and I thought, great. My one opportunity to finally be invited to this party that was one of Austin's greatest drug and alcohol parties. And I'm looking hot and I'm not going. That's just great. Right? Just great. And they said, well, we're going to go hear Bob. And they knew I didn't want to go hear Bob. And then we're going to go see Bonnie Raitt at Antone's later. You want to go do that? Well, I didn't want to go do that, guys. I mean, great. Bonnie Raitt. Big deal. So I said, okay, fine. Well, now keep in mind, it's early 80s, and I am dressed like Tina Turner. And nobody else is dressed up at Antone. So I look like a hooker. And, oh, it's not pretty. Nobody's getting that I'm Tina Turner. I just got this black dress on it. And so I start drinking. I could care less. I have my little stash. I'm doing that. And the evening gets ugly. Ugly, ugly, ugly. Because alcohol quit working a long time ago. I'm 26. Now every time I drink, I get angry. I'm no longer the fun drunk. I'm angry. And so it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And so we finally all go home. And I didn't mention I had a little gal staying with me for a few months. And she hooks up with this guy that I think is really cute, right? And I got the other guy that's just, you know, my role in the hay buddy, and that's no fun. And so I'm thinking, oh, well, that's just great. You know, she's got the cute guy. You know, come on, go back in your 20s. You remember that feeling. And, well, actually, there's, heck, you guys are so young, half of you, you're living it. And so, so I am, I'm in the bathroom and I'm smoking cigarettes and I'm drinking and I'm mad and I'm flicking them in the bathtub and I can't believe this is happening. And, you know, she's in the other room with the guy that I want and I got the other guy in there and I'm not going in there. I'm not going to do it. And about 3 hours go by and that's when we do our best thinking, right? That, when it talks about outright mental defect, that is what I am operating out of. And I am telling you what, my greatest plan was, I'm going to go in there and tell them I got a drinking problem because I know my girlfriend will not go to AA and I'll go to that AA meeting with them in the morning and I'll get both of them to sit on either side of me. Right? The great idea. There is a God. He just gave me the greatest idea, right? I go in there. I wake Tony up and I said, Tony, I think I have a drinking problem. And he goes, what? I go, man, I think I have a drinking problem. I think I need that AA program you guys got. And he goes, let me go get Joe. I mean, I'm like, oh, sweet. It's like 4 a.m. Here comes Joe all tiffed out thinking. And all I wanted was their attention, right? Don't get this story confused. I just wanted their attention. I'm desperately lonely. I just want your attention. So I get both these guys. They're 12-stepping me now, I understand. And doing a pretty darn good job of it now that I look back at it. Well, that I am so high and so full of booze that I probably sleep for about 30 minutes. And they are like, come on, it's a 9 o'clock meeting. Come on, we're going to the meeting. And I'm thinking, oh, bad idea now. Don't really want to do that now. I just kind of wanted your attention. Got it. Mm-mm. And they're like, no, come on, we're going to the meeting. Well, I mean, my hair is still kind of towering gold, right? To one side, I got the black. There's no shower taking place, no nothing. I walk into this meeting, and I'll never forget the feeling when I walked in that meeting, and I thought, it looked like you guys. I mean, there was no trench coat. There was no old man. They were all people my age. And I sit down, and they said, is anybody new? And I kid you not, the group goes, and I stood up. I still have never seen anybody stand up to introduce themselves. I stand up and just say, you know, hey, I'm Katie. Sit back down. Thought, whoa, that's it. Well, then, you know, Tony gets this great idea to hook this chick up with me and sends me out into the, you know, coffee room. And I'm thinking, oh, great. You know, I wanted both the boys. I had the deal. It was working out. And this chick takes me, and that's where the miracle happened. She explained alcoholism to me. And I began to realize at that point, my God, I got an alcohol problem. I thought I had an outside issues problem. I got an alcohol problem. I don't do anything without alcohol. I have clearly lost the power of choice. We all went to go have coffee. And I'll tell you guys, I miss this. It may be in y'all's group, but I've been around a while. I don't see it as often as I used to. The new guy comes with you. You don't just talk to him after the meeting. They scooped me up, and I went to coffee. I went to Coco's. I went to JoJo's. I went everywhere. They took my phone number. I didn't take their number. They took my phone number. They hit me with phone call, phone call, phone call. I mean, that fellowship picked me up and carried me. That is why I stayed sober. I worked the steps fairly rapidly. I'd say within, you know, 3 months I was doing my, I did it around Christmas. And so about 6 weeks I was doing a 4-step. So, I mean, yes, I was working the steps fairly rapidly. But what I loved was the fact of the fellowship, the laughter in these rooms. That laughter just, it was, I loved it. It was something I hadn't done in a long, long time. And they handed me the book. That was not necessarily good, although they needed to. It's important when you hand somebody the book to ask them how good their reading skill is, just a tip. Okay? And then the book seemed a little sexist to me. You know, women get that. Men just laugh, but women get that. And today I wouldn't touch it, right? But when you're brand new sober, man, your guard's up on everything. And so I hang around. I do the steps. I end up falling crazy in love with the guy that was with my girlfriend. We had a little problem there in the beginning of the relationship over that one. But we end up getting married, right? You know, boy meets girl on AA campus. I was 10 minutes sober. He was 6 years sober. And I don't necessarily recommend that. However, the book tells me I really can't be in the middle of that, right? It says I can't be the arbiter of your sex life. Now, I can talk to you if it causes problems. But the truth is Joe and I were married for 20 years. And unfortunately, he got a brain tumor 6 years ago and died. And it was tragic. Woo-hoo! And that's as my story goes. I do operate with notes only because a lot's happened in 24 years. I don't want to miss anything. What ended up happening, guys, is I had this beautiful God's grace. For 2 years, I'm knee-deep in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm running conferences. We're starting meetings. I mean, we are doing the deal. And this is where I really want you to perk up, okay? Especially you guys that don't have a lot of time. Perk up. Because to me, this is almost inevitable. I think so. You can have the best program in the world, work with the best people in the world, and you almost go into this lull. And I call it third step is your second surrender that a lot of us miss, and it's what I missed. So I'm tooling along, and life is great, right? I'm getting all the gifts of sobriety. I mean, do you agree that life gets better? You get jobs. You get a car. You get a house. I had another baby. I have a great guy. We're having challenges just like anybody would in relationship. But then what we decide to do, and I don't know how this happened around 3 years, we deviated to enlarge our spiritual life. And we found Jesus. I love Jesus. Don't get me wrong. But Jesus alone and no AA program is a dangerous untreated alcoholic with Jesus. And I mean to tell you, we ran off every AA friend because, you know, we tried to start AA at church, you know, the Lion Tamers, and, you know, the 12 steps said, Jesus, Jesus. Charlie always goes, do you always have to say Jesus? It makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I went, honey, there is something different about being a Jesus freak and loving Christianity and church and that avenue, right? So you got to get the whole picture here. So Joe and I became Jesus freaks. And, oh my God. I mean, we have pictures of us and it looks like somebody, well, we look like the Amish. You know? And, and we did Jesus for 3 years. I never stepped back into an AA meeting for 3 years. I'm talking God's grace here. This is the beauty of God's grace. Now, the only problem with God's grace is when it ends, it's like a light switch. Click! It's over. God's grace ended. And that's what you never see coming. Right? And I always love this line. Well, I mean, I'm not gonna drink. Oh yeah, you are. See, that line to me, you don't even know how close to the edge you are. If you're angry and not working these 12 steps to the fullest of your ability, and you're pissed off and you're telling somebody how pissed off you are, and you go, well, I mean, I'm not gonna drink. When did you get the choice back? See, that's how I was. I know it today because I was it. I mean, people would say, you know, oh, I was furious. I'll never forget. I'm sitting at a red light and this woman's not taking a right on red. And I'm loving Jesus. And I'm telling you, I am trying to figure out how to ram her into that intersection. That is not good. That is not good. And I went to Joe and I said, man, I'm miserable. I am absolutely miserable. And he goes, so am I. And I go, well, what are we going to do? And he goes, let's go back to AA. I said, that's a good plan. I said, so, you know, cause see, you can mix, spirituality, whatever you want, the Koran, the Bible, you know, whatever your religious preference is, as long as you don't give up on AA, right? See, I mean, there's a combination. And that's what I was missing. So I'm not saying anything against organized religion, and more power to you, just don't quit the 12 steps and your activity in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, Joe and I walk into a meeting. And I'll never forget Ed H. God love him. He was sharing. And I leaned over to Joe and I said, my God, we're home. This is the feeling. Now let me tell you what happened. Little did I know, we became meeting-based sobriety. I didn't know at the time that's what we were doing. I didn't go, oh my God, we're home. Give me that book. No. Matter of fact, I didn't even know where my big book was. But I really didn't need it. Because I'd done the 12 steps. And they're on the wall. You know. And, so, you know, I mean, really, how much do you need? I mean, I'm not gonna drink. See, this is I hear this dialogue all day long. All day long. So, we're tooling along, right? I love the line 60 to 63. The hardest surrender I think any of us have to do is that third step surrender. And I'll step out there and be a little racy. I think a lot of people tend to go to other 12 step programs when it's a third step issue. Do not take that wrong. I think there is a huge thing that happens in the surrender to self, and we deviate to another 12 step program because I cannot surrender to self. I'm not saying that, but the book tells me it will take care of all my problems. Unless, of course, they're sex. Unless, of course, they're my husband. Unless, of course, they're my children. See, it says all my problems. So, I'm the victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I just manage well. I don't know about you guys, but man, when the drink problem was gone, whew, man, thanks for getting that baby off my back. Now, let me take over my career. Let me take over my children and you, my husband. Do everything I need you to do. And that's what I did, guys. I mean, I ran the show. I made an incredible amount of money in my business. My children went to private school. You know, I'm doing the whole deal and I am miserable. I really am miserable. But I'm doing the deal and I'm not drinking. So, I mean, and I'm sponsoring people. I'm doing armchair therapy. I've had so much therapy. You know, I did one inventory with one girl where we did boundaries. Do you not love that? Did you catch what I just said? Yeah, she sat down. She pulled her inventory out. And I taught her how to do boundaries because that's what you need. No fourth column. No nothing. See, it can be done. It's not the greatest way in the world. But it was done that way, and that was me. Same person. So, all of a sudden, Joe gets sick. The monkey's on my back. The compulsion to drink is back. freaks me out. I go to the sickest AA meeting in Austin because that's where you have to go. See, you don't go to solution-based meetings when you're as sick as I am. As a matter of fact, if you walk in and you start spouting off the big book, la, 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 I got nothing for you. You know what? Our group never grew. That was fine with us, right? That's what we liked. Our group never grew. And so when I told them the compulsion was back, they patted me on the shoulder and said, keep coming back. Because, see, that's what I would have said. That's all I got. It's nobody's fault, right? I just deviated to sick AA. I didn't know it was sick AA. I am middle of the road, right? I don't even know. It's not like I made a choice to be middle of the road. I thought I was doing the AA program because that's what I'd been raised on, right? I mean, I deviated and it was all good. Well, let me tell you, with my new understanding here, it's completely different today. But I have to tell you, and I only want to say this one thing because I know I'm in the belly of the beast here, is middle of the road AA doesn't necessarily know they're middle of the road AA. They really don't. And when they make me crazy today, don't get me wrong. I sit in a meeting, I'm like, but I got to remember I was one of them, right? And because I was one of them, it talks about love and tolerance is my code and grow an understanding of this program and how can I bring them to the other side, which then brings me into the first time I met Chris. I love Chris Raymer. But the first time I heard him, I could not listen to his CD. Charlie and I are on our way to see his brother up in Dallas. Charlie's all about, he's in complete untreated alcoholism too. He hates when I say that, but he was so in untreated alcoholism. And, he was so bad. And so, he goes, you know, Katie, we gotta go see this, you know, big book study. I'm like, oh, why? And he goes, just come on with me. We're going to go to Dallas. And then halfway there, he goes, did you bring your big book? And I went, no. And he goes, well, you know, if you don't bring your big book to this meeting, they'll give you a hard time. I'm like, bring it on. Bring it on. Give me a hard time, man. I mean, I am so cocky. You know that line in the book that says that fear, it made us cocky, it made us worse. It should have Katie, a little picture of me right there. And so we're on our way up there. Charlie sticks in Chris's CD. And I mean, I am turning it off and I go, oh, now hold on just a second. And Charlie, at one point, I must have turned him off 20 times. Charlie goes, for God's sakes, can we listen to the man, Katie? And I go, no, I don't want to listen to this. Not at all. Not at all. See, he's challenging everything I believed. So we end up going into primary purpose group. We see his brother, love him to death, love the meeting, can't wait. So grateful they didn't give me a hard time for not having a big book. Leave out of there, go back to my sick AA meeting, right, that I went to 5 days a week, and Chris's CD pulled that curtain back, and I went, my God, I told Charlie, I went, that guy is right on the money. I am sitting in a room full of people that don't have it, and I'm one of them. And I mean, it was great and scary all at the same time. I mean, it freaked me out. I have never ever had a message that I absolutely didn't want to hear and heard it. You talk about the God's grace and all of this deal. Well, from that point on, Charlie and I end up at a bizarre deal where we run into Mark H. God's hand was so in this deal. He so wanted Charlie and I to be in this world because what's happened is so clearly what God wanted to have happen. And that's the best part of my story, guys. We are on fire with AA. Now, I got to tell you, when you're 17 years sober and all of a sudden you go, I don't know how to sponsor the new guy, I guarantee you're sitting in this room. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I had no idea how to sponsor a new guy. Now, if you had some time, I could do some therapy. I'm good at therapy. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm good at boundaries. I'm good at all that stuff. The right way to say it, use your I words, not your you words, you know, all that stuff. And, but what I didn't get was how do you explain alcoholism? So I'm telling you, when I picked up this book after 17 years, it's as if I'd never read it before. I mean, I don't remember any of it. And I told you I was knee deep in AA in early sobriety. you know, heading conferences, sponsoring. I knew the disease of alcoholism, the physical allergy, phenomenon of craving, mental, nothing. I knew nothing. You talk about a delusional disease. And so we ended up getting hooked up with all these big book thumpers. And the next thing you know, man, I am taking it out to the treatment centers. I am really beginning to experience all 12 steps. When we were at Mark's workshop, I'm still a little not really digging the whole deal, right? Charlie goes, we get there, and I'm fighting him every step of the way. I am not an easy relationship, if you have picked up on that by now. And so I am fighting the whole deal, and Mark keeps saying the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12, 10, 11, and 12. I'm thinking, shut up. And Charlie goes, God, I wish he'd quit saying that, man. It's bugging the crap out of me. I'm like, no kidding. I mean, to tell you, I got nothing. And so we go back to our room. He's giving us this 11-step evening review, right? And Charlie's over there diligently doing the work. And he goes, aren't you going to do it? And I go, I am not doing that. I'm not doing all that nonsense, you know. For God's sakes, I am sober. Well, long story short, man, if you're in my little beehive, you are writing an 11-step inventory at night, right? You're doing that evening review. Well, we end up getting on fire, and the next thing you know, we are God's hand. You know, the book talks about when we look back, we see that God brought to us more than we could have ever imagined, paraphrasing. And I'm telling you, you guys, this is today what I understand. And these are some pointers that I think are very, very important. These are what I've learned in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't get to just do some of the steps. You're either in or you're not. And what happens is my story will happen to you. I can guarantee it. I see it every day. You be around this program long enough and sober long enough and you can see it happening, right? You can see the people who are on their way out. And you're hoping for a miracle, man. You're hoping for that psychic change to happen again. You're hoping to bring them into the right thing. The book tells me we are beyond human aid. The best sponsorship cannot change you. Mm-mm. And that surrender, I can't give it to you. I can explain it to you, but I can't give it to you. And I work with people, you know, Chris sent me a gal that, God love her, you know, she's sober today, but boy, I've chewed her ass out every day for 8 months. And, all she is sober. But by God, we are working with that step, right? Well, several things were happening in this process, right? I got about 8 minutes. I'll wind this down, my observation of the 12 steps. I learned how to sponsor new people. I'd get the new guy in, right? And I'd start working with them. And I'm talking, I work with them. They don't call me, I call them. I don't like any of that nonsense. They're not ready. How many of y'all are ready? Everybody's ready. Yeah, we don't want the life we got, man. I'm dying here on the vine. I'm ready. I'm just not at a surrender. Well, I'm not giving up on you, man. I'll call you. If I don't hear from you for a few days, I'm calling you. I find the person sitting in the meeting all by their self. I hope you hear this. All by their self, I look for that woman who nobody's talking to. She clearly isn't sitting with anybody. I go over there to her. I get her phone number. I call her every couple of days. I check on her. How's it going? You know, every time I do that, I swear they fall into the fold. They fall in the fold. And that's the one thing I see missing in AA. God dang it, we're so cliquish. You know, we just talk and we walk right past that new guy. You know, I've been given the gift. Oh, well, there it is. You know, so my gals have to do that. I said, when you go to a meeting, this is not about social hour here. The social hour at Alcoholics Anonymous is when you go have coffee. Before the meeting, I want you looking for that new guy. God darn it. And because you know what? That's how I got it. I'm 24 years sober because people cared. And we lose a lot of that. Well, one of the things that happened too, okay, I'm tooling along. I'm trying to get this deal again, trying to get this deal. And I'll tell you, when you've got a lot of time and you're trying to get back into Alcoholics Anonymous, the feeling I had was, I had one shot, man. This God thing ain't gonna happen. I got a sponsor. She was good. You know, she finally got me an inventory. I think she took too long. She thinks she took too long. We were both kind of spoon feeding each other. But the truth of the matter is I needed to get that blockage out of the way, man. I was ate up with so much anger. So I had what I call the drunk prayer going on. The drunk prayer is the prayer where you are begging God to take the pain away, but you're not really willing to give doing it up, right? I'm not really willing to give the guy up. not really, I got major financial problems, but I'm not really willing to give up shoe shopping, right? So, I mean, please take away this financial pain. You know, I really want to quit smoking, but I'm not really willing to give the cigarettes up. Okay, yeah, I really want to get fit, man. I mean, I can't stand myself, but I ain't going to the gym. Okay, so you know what I'm saying? It's cause and effect, cause and effect. It's the law of cause and effect, right? So I call that the drunk prayer. It's not that God's not listening. It's that I'm not doing my part to do the deal, right? See, God changes my heart, but I've got to go do what I don't want to do, period. It's that simple. We talk about spiritual principles in this program. Well, what spiritual principles are very simple. People say, well, I don't know if I should get that car or what God's will is here. God doesn't care what you're driving. Can you afford it? If you can't, spiritual principle says you don't get a new car. Sorry. See, that's the way that works. We live by spiritual principle. Find out the spiritual principles of this program. That is God's answer, right? That's the deal. You know, if I struggle with relationships with people, then I don't get to get in a relationship. But see, you haven't met this guy. It's perfect. You want to live by spiritual principle? Let's see what happens to you when you don't have this guy. If this guy's supposed to happen, it'll happen at the end. See, that's the way spiritual principle works, right? The terms we make with God, two terms. It says it in 60 to 63. Stay close to him, perform his work well. He will take care of everything we need. See, I think I need to get the job. I think I need to get the guy. I think I need to get the money. Then I'll feel better about myself and I'll be able to help you. Now, doesn't that sound like a good plan? That would sound like a great plan if you were going to therapy and were not an alcoholic. That is a good plan. Let's figure out what's wrong with Katie so that we can help her get what she needs. The only problem is I suffer from a disease of delusion, right? I can't see anything. I believe the lie no matter what. So God says, take care of my kids and I will take care of you. It's all a paradox. And it does not, I'm telling you, when I am hurting bad and my sponsor told me you need to go out to the treatment center and talk to those people, that's not a good idea. Mm-mm. As a matter of fact, I really think we ought to talk about me. Don't you think that's, I am hurting. Don't you hear? I am hurting. Well, the book says also, go work with the drunk. It works when nothing else does. See, I'm so sick of talking about you. You got to go do it. I'm sick of talking about me. It's not happening, right? So the other thing is the second half of the third step prayer. Take away my difficulties so that victory over them can make Katie feel good. That's what I thought it said. It says, take away my difficulties so that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. There it is again, right? How many of you guys sponsor and the person comes up to you with the exact same problem you had? And don't they bug the crud out of you? Oh, yeah. You're like, you can't even believe it. And then you got to remember the second half of the third step prayer. God said, oh, I'm bringing all these people to you with almost the exact situation. Because, see, the difficulty's been removed. Instead of you getting frustrated with them, you need to help them through this. The line that killed me in the book was the one on page 20. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. First time I went, that page 20, that's a little early in the deal, don't you think? Not really digging that. The other thing is that third step surrender, guys. The third step surrender. If you are a couple years sober and miserable, you are at the turning point of the third step surrender. And that's where you got to work knee deep with your sponsor in what that looks like. Selfish and self-centered is the root of our problem, right? It is what our disease is about. Selfish doesn't mean stingy. Self-centered doesn't mean conceited. It means all I think about is me. I mean me. When you're talking, I can't wait to tell you about me. Right? Charlie and I use this all the time. It's the line that says, we call it story stealing. So somebody walks up and says, hey, you know, man, I'm going to Costa Rica. And the first thing I've been to Costa Rica, man. I went to Costa Rica. I stayed at this hotel. I went whitewater rafting and blah, 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 blah. And then you look at me and go, hey, Oh, there's so-and-so. See you in a minute. They never got to tell you about Costa Rica, did they? See? That's self-centered. Now, I'm out of time. Darn it. But I'm going to end with something. I want to tell you guys, selfish and self-centered, the third step is so powerful. It is not a theory. It is not a theory. Your life will change so radically it's unbelievable. The 10th step, the 11th step, and the 12th step are our daily disciplines, right? If you're not continuing to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, asking God to remove them, calling somebody immediately, making an amends if necessary, turning our thoughts to someone we could help, you're not doing a 10th step. As a matter of fact, I don't know what the heck we're doing sometimes. I mean, I won't hear from somebody for a week, and I go, you went all week without any of those four creeping up? What the heck? Well, you know what? Let's just pull that 10th step. It's not working anyway, is it? Right? I mean, I'm telling you, it's, you know, that's a tough one. Then the 11th step, divorce me from self-pity, is the first thing it says, right? So when you wake up, God's saying, divorce me from self-pity, because most of us do not wake up thrilled. We are like, oh, dang, oh, geez, I went to bed too late, I smoked too many cigarettes, blah, 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 right? Next thing is dishonesty and self-seeking motives. My gosh, you know, it didn't say, you know, divorce me from fear. It starts out with all my defects, right? Well, the other thing, too, is that I want to tell you guys is I am knee-deep in Alcoholics Anonymous. Charlie and I run a big book study every Tuesday night if you're in Austin. It's the primary purpose group. We have about 150 people that show up to that. There's a real need. I also believe that women in AA, I'm teaching them how to sponsor, because there happens to be some sort of talk that there are not enough strong women in AA. I don't believe that personally, because there's 50 women at my house and we're teaching them sponsorship, and there's clearly a need for it, but I think that we're all a little weak in sponsorship, yes? Let me hear it from the ladies, yes? Men and women, thank you. Every Monday night I have a meeting with my sponsees. So I sponsor about 20 gals. And it's a requirement that you be at my house on Monday night, because we do the deal there. And I'm a very tough sponsor, and I love that. And my life is better than it ever could have been. I never saw that coming. I stayed close to him. I performed his work well, and my life got great. And I lost my husband. My life got great. I'm crazy in love with Charlie Parker, who sometime is going to marry me. I know. We're going to eventually get married. But I'm crazy in love with him. Chris has ridden him so hard, I know probably when we leave, we'll probably go get married tomorrow. But let me end with this. And I ran about 3 or 4 minutes over, but I love this. I'm not a big fan of daily reflections, but I do love this one page out of it. It says, such is the paradox of AA, regeneration. Strength arises out of complete defeat and weakness. The loss of one's old life as a condition for finding a new one. That's in AA Comes of Age. What glorious mystery paradoxes are. They do not compute. Yet when recognized and accepted, they reaffirm something in the universe beyond human logic. When I face a fear, I am given courage. That doesn't make sense. When I support a brother or sister, my capacity to love myself increases when I help someone. When I accept pain as a part of the growing experience of life, I realize a greater happiness. So through your pain, you're going to get a greater happiness. When I look at my dark side, I'm brought into the new light. When I accept my vulnerabilities and surrender to a higher power, I am graced with unforeseen strength. I stumbled through the doors of AA in disgrace, expecting nothing from life. And I have been given hope and dignity. Miraculously, guys, the only way to keep the gift of this program is to pass it on. Thanks so much. Yeah.